You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everyone, it's Mike here. Just wanted to put in a little note and thank everybody who came and saw us at Comcaster Burris. You are going to have two interviews ahead of you. And we are talking to Katrin Stewart, and we are also talking to Mark Shepard. And, well, Mark Shepard did all the talking. We didn't really get to talk to him all that much. But it was a great time for two panels that Earth Station Who got to participate in. And Mike and Mary had a great time talking to Katrin. And then Mark just stole the show. I hope you guys enjoy, and we will talk to you soon.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it.
Hey, vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, the fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast. Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
My name is Mike Faber. I'm the host of the Earth Station Who podcast, and we are recording this for a live episode. So you guys will be part of our show tonight, and will be available probably by Wednesday of this week up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and such. And you can find us at esopodcast.com. So we are really excited to be here at Con K. Let's hear a big raise of applause for Con K.
That sounds like a Sunday crowd.
Yeah, exactly. My name is, as you said, Mike Faber. We have my co-host with us, Mr. Mike Gordon. Want to say hi?
Howdy.
And of course, the one and only Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody.
This is her first Con K.
My first one.
So it's her first time to Huntsville. She's loving it so far.
I am. I am having a fantastic time. I hope you all are, too.
So, of course, you guys aren't here to see us. We are here to see our guest. Let's welcome Caitlin Stewart.
Thanks. Yes, it's Katrin. Everyone's been asking me this weekend. It's a Welsh name, and it's Katrin, but Katrin, the Welsh version of Katrin. So, yes. It's, people don't call me, say it in London, so.
I can read it.
It's fine. I can be Kat, Caitlin, Katrin.
So howdy and welcome to Huntsville. Is this your first time?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes,
and this is day two of this convention.
It is, yes. I'm a bit less jet-lagged, I think, than yesterday. enjoying myself and finding any moment I can to go in the sun, because
there's a lot of it here.
There's a lot of it here. There's not much in Britain. But yeah, it's lovely to be here and meet everyone, and I'm loving the accents. no one's got as strong an accent as I'd hoped. I'm still yet to hear a real southern accent, how I'd imagined.
Oh, really?
I came to Alabama.
Very cool. Have you done a lot of conventions before?
Yeah, I've done a few. I was in Minneapolis about 3 weeks ago.
That's a different kind of accent.
Yeah, I just sounded sort of general American to me, but I couldn't tell the difference between that and sort of, I don't know, is it a very specific accent?
It is.
Yeah. It would be a little different. I suppose it's
different to the South, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
And I've done a few in Australia, and Baltimore and
Does it blow your mind that Doctor Who is worldwide?
Yes, he's mental. I went to the first one in Germany a few years ago, so it's getting big over there, and New Zealand. But yeah, Americans seem to love it more than anyone, I think.
Really?
I think so. I haven't done that many in Britain. There's definitely more Doctor Who conventions in America.
Okay.
Specific Doctor Who, I think. There's smaller ones in Britain, but I've definitely been to America more to do them.
Gotcha.
So weekend.
So tell us about working on Doctor Who. So I guess we'll start from originally getting the part.
Yeah, I apologize to anyone who was here yesterday, because they probably heard all this, but I'm trying to think of more exciting ways to tell my stories. I auditioned for it as any part. The casting director saw me in my third year in drama school and told my agent he really liked me, and then a few months later he called me in for an audition. So I read with him, Andy Pryor, and who's the casting director and the director. And it was just one scene, the first scene that you see Jenny in A Good Man Goes to War with Man Buster in the house, when the TARDIS has landed in the living room and she comes out to the hallway. So it was just that scene for the audition, which isn't a very big scene. I think it was just that. I had a bit of a chat, and I got the call. I think I got the call when I was sort of on my way to a boring, rubbish waitressing job. So I was just pleased to have a job, and then I was obviously very excited to know it was Doctor Who.
So the stereotype of the actress waitress is true.
Yeah. Not so much anymore for me, touch wood. But it's quite good because it's evening job work, so you can do auditions in the day if you need to.
Sure.
And it's sort of not as, it's quite flexible. It can be quite flexible work. Yeah.
I'd like to thank you for being a part of increasing diversity and representation in the media.
Ah, thank you.
Thank you. Did you know that that's where the relationship with Bastion would go when you were first?
No, I had no idea. I was saying yesterday I didn't really realize till maybe the read through of The Good Man Goes to War that there was something more to the relationship. I think Neve, who plays my master, sort of, who I knew already through doing a play with her, we had a little chat after the read through, and I said, what's that line about? I think there was a line about that. I think Madame Bachelor sort of comments on another girl, I think, in A Good Man Goes to War, and Jenny gets a bit jealous. And everyone sort of laughed in the read-through when I said it, and I didn't click quite what it was. So you don't really, you wouldn't expect that in Doctor Who, but I thought it was a great benefit or positive aspect to add to the relationship and the whole episode. And then the first time I found out they were married was in The Snowman, when she introduces me as her wife. I didn't know we'd got married till then.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'd quite like to see that episode. Go back in time and watch that with Strax as the page boy or something.
Yeah, I think I'd read somewhere that they didn't give you a lot of backstory, so you and Eve kind of formed your own, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, they don't really
fair?
Give backstories with Doctor Who, the episodes are so sort of separate, they don't always really lead, unless you're a main part, mm-hmm. your character journey isn't sort of as clear. And because we were coming in and out of episodes, it was quite hard to follow where they were before or what had happened in between. So, I think we sat down and discussed how they met, and I was very lucky that me and Eve already knew each other, because I think that we already had
chemistry
and we were relaxed and comfortable with each other and playful on set, and hopefully that comes across in the episodes.
Now does the Doctor Who set encourage being playful?
Does
the Doctor Who set encourage being playful?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's obviously not a lot of time to do a lot. You know, it's not like we were on a big film set with weeks and weeks to film. We've got quite, I think we've got like 2.5 weeks to film an episode. So there's only so many times you can do the scene. But I think if you were Peter or Matt on Peter's first day,
He's behind me.
He's listening. I better say something nice. On his first day, his first scene was when he comes out the TARDIS onto the riverbank. And we spent a lot of time on that scene because that was the first time you see the Doctor. So it was really important for him to feel like he was doing what he wanted to do and being as playful as possible and trying out new things. It's not rushed, but I think actors always feel like, oh, I can't ask to do it again because
it costs money.
But then I've sort of, as I've got older and more experienced and confident, I've sort of said, oh, do you mind if I do that again? Because it wasn't quite how I wanted to, or I want to try something different. There was quite long scenes as well, especially in, I don't know what episode it is, when Niamh has so many lines. She always has a lot of lines, Niamh, and very like, they're not the easiest lines to learn. So sometimes those scenes can take quite a long time because you'd have to break them up or we'd film them in sections. But I always just love being on the set and watching everything that's going on, being a part of it.
Did you know when you first auditioned that there would be future episodes with them?
No idea. I was just got the phone call, I think, a few weeks before. The Snowman and the Crimson Horror, asking if we wanted to come back. But I think they'd already written the episode, so it was a good job. We were all free. but it was a really nice surprise. And then to be asked again, and then to be in Peter's first episode, I thought, oh, that's a big deal. And then that was the one that was screened in the cinemas, I think. After the 50th or before?
It was a few months later. I saw both of them at the theater.
We would have liked to have been part of the 50th one, but I think they had enough people in that one.
That must have been the transition between Matt and Peter must have been very huge, and you were right there when Peter's first day, right?
I think it was his first day. I may have imagined that and convinced myself that I was there for his first day, but it definitely felt like it was his, but maybe it wasn't his first day, but it was his first introduction as the Doctor,
gotcha.
First ever seen, I think. And obviously I think the last episode I filmed with Matt was I'm really bad at remembering the names of the episodes because it was 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
The name of the Doctor. And then I read that Matt was leaving, and then I saw it on the telly that who the new Doctor was watching it all, and then obviously to be asked to be in it with him. But his first episode was really, really exciting, and that our gang could be introduced to the new Doctor meant that was possibility that we could come back, but we didn't.
Was it a different sort of environment with the new Doctor?
I think it's always going to be different. Obviously, Jenna was still there, and it was really interesting to see their new relationship and how that was going to work. But I think Peter, I think the kind of actors they cast as the Doctors are usually very, have a certain energy and a certain way of working. So it didn't feel different. It didn't feel like less fun or tense or anything. It was just, he's just a different, you know, he's older than Matt. He's,
sure.
He's more experienced. He's, you know, his energy is different. So that was different. But it was actually really interesting to see that new Doctor. And that new relationship was really interesting between Clara and him.
Mm-hmm. Were you very familiar with the Doctor franchise before you got the part?
No.
No? No, it's okay.
It's all right.
I was going to have to apologize. No, I wasn't. I was saying again yesterday that I grew up in Cardiff, so I knew that that's where it filmed, and I think it was like a big deal when they brought it back with Christopher Eccleston and Danny Piper. Is it
She was the first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I remember seeing some of it being filmed in Cardiff when I was younger. But yeah, I hadn't really watched it. I think I watched a bit on, at Christmas on the Christmas specials. And then when I got the audition, I did a bit of research and tried to watch a bit. And then I've watched some since.
Okay.
I watched quite a bit of Peter and Jenna's. I haven't, yeah, not the last. I didn't watch any of the last series with Pearl. I didn't manage to catch any of that. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Jodie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your genre? What do you like? What do you like to watch?
I think my genre is more realism.
Okay.
Sort of very, yeah, and I, there's, as much as I was playing Dr. Luke, playing Jenny, the kind of roles I'd love to play are grounded in real realism and truth and telling real stories. Not necessarily people, you know, recreating real stories, but
grittier, more contemporary.
Yeah, modern. But I, you know, I'd love to do period drama. But I guess simple. I don't know how to explain it.
No.
It's not sci-fi, I have definitely, it's opened my eyes to sci-fi, and I really love that Doctor Who has that realism as well as a sort of otherworldly, but every character has, you can relate to, and there's, you know, there's emotion there, and there are relationships, and you can still feel something from watching it, even though it's not grounded in what I would say is reality. I guess my sort of taste is more improvisation. I don't know if you know a guy called Mike Lee or Ken Loach, where you're watching it and you're not even sure if they're acting or not because it's so truthful and raw, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What inspired you to become an actor?
I'm not sure if anything quite inspired me. I just have always loved it. I've just done it since I was a young age. Performing. There's a tradition in Wales called the Eisteddfod, which is like a big festival where children compete, different schools compete against different schools, singing, acting, reciting, dancing, music. So I think from like the age of five, I was up on stage on my own reciting. And my mum always said I was the loudest in the choir and things. There's a big tradition of performing in Wales and singing and so that was sort of instilled in me. And then I just went to drama groups from a young age, kept going and different kinds, and realised that I just loved it. I didn't know if I was any good at it. It was just a hobby. So now it does feel odd sometimes that my hobby has become my work, and that can sometimes be a positive thing, but also a negative thing, because when I'm not doing it, it's even harder because it's very personal to me. But yeah, I don't think anything I watched necessarily made me go, oh, I want to do that. I think I have an interest in people and other people's stories and trying to understand why people are the way they are and empathising with other people is something I think I've always been able to do.
Are the arts something that are part of the educational system in Wales?
Yeah, I think in Britain, I mean, there are cuts to the arts, but I did a lot of drama in school and music. I'm not saying it's the same now or in every school, but in Wales, I think there is a focus on that because it's such in the tradition of Wales, the singing and the music and performing and poetry and language and music. So I was very lucky that I had great teachers. My primary school headmaster really encouraged me to sort of follow my passion in that sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And just one last question about working on Doctor Who. I would imagine that, like you were talking about, it is a little different working on a science fiction show because you've got, in addition to keeping the show grounded in some sort of realness, you have all these special effects things you have to worry about in the shots, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another challenge in itself. It's something I loved embracing. I sort of felt like a big kid on set because I was like, where else am I going to pretend that there's a massive dinosaur in front of me, and they just put a spot on the wall, and they say, right, you all need to look there, that's the dinosaur. Okay, and this is the Thames, so you know it's really big, but you're looking at a tiny set, and we all have to do these huge sort of reactions and you know, noises about the dinosaur. And then actually, when you watch it later, it looks so good. They've got such an amazing team, and the special effects on set, and the fire, and the blowing up, and everything. There's so many people involved in creating the show and making it the sort of success it is. And then the Crimson Horror, when I had to walk into the big mill, the director said, so you've just got to imagine that there are these huge machines and it's really loud. And I watched it recently and I think I do this. that was my way of showing that it was loud.
That was really loud.
There was no sound. And you do feel quite stupid. You know, you sort of feel like you're mining. And you feel like you're doing really bad acting. But then when you watch it back, when you see it tied in with what they've actually created, I was glad that I acted the way I did, because it would have looked stupid if I didn't do it that big.
I would imagine the acting schools and courses now would have to include things like working in front of a green screen and all that, right? Or no, maybe?
Because
it's so prevalent
like now. I didn't do much green screen on Doctor Who. I guess, yeah, those are things you sort of learn on set. They're definitely doing more focus on television and screen acting. Most of my training was in theatre. We did one or two courses, like a few weeks, on screen acting. But there's definitely more of a push towards that now, because that is where most people tend to work or need the experience, because it's so technical. But yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff being made in terms of like video games and they're using real actors, and that's a lot of where the work is going now.
Yeah. Well, very cool. We want to hear from you guys. We've got, in addition to the two mics up here, we've got two mics on the floor, so you can go up to each one of them if you've got a question.
Well, I guess I was going to do a good follow-up to the question you said about working green screen. Was there a scene that you had to do that was emotionally difficult to do? And a follow-up, was there a scene where just the humor in the scene just made it hard for you to just capture the moment because you just couldn't stop laughing?
So the scene that was hard to do in terms of emotionally, Jenny doesn't get that emotional, but you probably remember the scene in the... the episode now. So the name is where Jenny dies. I think I've just been murdered. What was that? Deep breath. Name of the doctor. I get those two really confused. I don't know why. There was the scene around the table with me and Riversong and Strax and Madame Vestra, which is a great scene. Again, where these things pop up, which when we watched it back, we were really amazed by these. I think the tea just appears.
Right.
Riversong just appears. But in the script, Stephen had written after my line, "No, Mom, I think I've just been murdered," that one single tear rolls down Jenny's face. Only one.
Only one.
And he's also written that with Clara at the Christmas special. So I don't know what the theme was there. Anyway, that scene in itself was quite hard because they were all having this conversation and then Jenny has to be in this other world where she's, you know, in her head. Something weird is happening with she's in another world where she's being murdered. So I was trying to work out, right, how the hell do I act this? Because, you know,
don't teach you that in school?
They don't teach you that, no. Yeah, so I was just trying to imagine, right, I'm being murdered right now even though there's nothing, I don't know what is happening. And then the tear. The problem with when you need to cry is you sort of, I always cry too early, so I cry on the take that isn't on me, or I cry in the rehearsal, or cry when it's too far away. And then by that point, you've run out of crying when it's your close-up. So I was doing quite well, and then it was like, okay, we're going to do your close-up now, and it was really close. I think it was literally on my eye. Okay, we just need to see the one tier.
Okay.
It was not coming. There was more tears coming, or there was no tears coming, but there wasn't just the one they needed, and they didn't want it. You know, they needed to catch the tear. Oh my God. And then my head kept moving because it was so close. They put like a, it was some like wooden thing here. So I had my neck, my chin was just resting here. And everybody was waiting for this one tear to come. And I was like, pressure. And yeah, it came, but I think out of pure frustration. and then another one clapped on the set. And I watched it back, and it is a very good moment. I just still don't understand why there was one tear. But I think I also had the makeup artist trying to give me, like, fake tears, and that was there weren't too many tears. So, yeah, that was hard. And then, humor-wise, God. I mean, it was always really fun, because... I loved all the stuff with Matt in the Crimson Horror, and like, we got on really well. I'd say it was all really fun. I think there's always this professional mode where you're in, especially if you're coming into something. I'm not in it all the time. I was always aware, like, I need to sort of be as professional as possible while still having fun. Whereas I'm sure if Matt and Jenna and Peter, if they started just laughing for ages, it's fine. But I was always aware that, I was not there for long, so I needed to do my best.
Frankly, every time Strax opens his mouth, I don't know how you keep his
pretty
face.
Yeah, that was good. It's always quite funny just seeing Strax and trying not to laugh because he looks so ridiculous. I guess that's the end. And also knowing that like Dan is under there was always kind of like funny because he was in that for 12 hours and most of the time I wouldn't see his face. I only see Dan as Dan in conventions, like because he'd come in the morning and he'd be getting his prosthetics done and leave, and then I'd leave at 7, and then they'd come home at like 9 to the hotel, and then unless I go down to the bar, which if I was up at 5, I probably wouldn't. But yeah, so it was quite funny to imagine Dan under there, especially when the face is so real and like fits in so well with the lines and the character he's playing.
This is totally non-Doctor Who related. Were you able to watch the royal wedding with the rest of the world?
I was, but I'm afraid I'm not that interested in them. I get the impression people from outside Britain have more of an obsession with the royal family. To be honest though, I had no interest, I had no intention to watch it. And then I turned the telly on, because I was at home, and I thought, maybe I'll just put it on. And I got completely drawn into it. And I think mainly because it was like different to any royal wedding before. It was actually had a bit of like passion in it and a bit of like diversity. And I loved the preacher. I loved like that Meghan walked down the aisle on her own, although I think she should have done it with her mum. They embraced a bit more than just the royal, boring, royal, rich family. So I actually, another way Harry, but totally drawn into it, and I was very surprised. Did you watch it?
Oh, yes.
but now I think we should move on from Meghan and Harry, just let them get on with it. And they'll have a lovely life.
Yes, you know Neil was here last year.
Oh, yeah.
And she was full of funny stories, and I was just wondering if you had any funny stories about Neve.
Payback.
Wow. Any funny stories about me? What were her stories? Were they about her?
Sure.
Yeah. I just love me. She's like such fun. I haven't seen her in ages. Saw her at a convention, and she always joins in like the discos and the parties and all that, which is great. I can't think of any. I'm so sorry. I'll have to ask her, and then I'll just claim it as my own. But I love her. Actually, she's in a play at the moment called Killer Joe in London, which is like set in America. Do you know it? Sam Shepherd.
heard of
it. You've heard of it. It was a film, but it was a play because then they did a film with it. It's set like Trailer Park, yeah. Orlando Bloom's play in Killer Joe.
Yes, that's what I know about.
Yeah. And Mead's in it, and I'm going to go and see it when I'm back. I've seen some photos, and she looks amazing in it. Like, I think it's set in like the Midwest, but in a trailer, sort of trailer park, so her costumes, and she just looks really different.
Yeah, I've seen photos from like the stop photos.
Yeah.
Preview photos, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I hope they show it in theaters so I can get
some. Yeah. I'm trying to think who wrote it. I think it was Sam Shepard. Do you know Sam Shepard?
Yeah.
I think it was him. Yeah, it is him. Yeah, you have to Google it. it's a really good play. It's quite dark. And yeah, I saw it first in drama school, and I actually really wanted to be in this production, and I asked my agent to find out if I could, and I even said to Niamh, please, because Niamh got cast in it, and I asked her to put in a word for me, but they'd already cast the other girl in it, the dotty part. So I thought we could be reunited. She was meant to come to Minneapolis, but she's always busy. She's always working, which is great. But it means I don't see her as much.
What is your favorite thing about Doctor Who?
Ooh. I think the fact that, well, I sort of mentioned it earlier, but the fact that so many people can relate to it in different ways. Like, I'm not a sci-fi fan, but I still really appreciate it and love it because I think the writing is so good and the stories and they're, even though it's, you know, like I said, otherworldly, like these characters, you can believe them. And I love the sense of adventure and like that kids love it, adults love it. But it has a huge fan base, and I'm always really interested to hear why you guys love it more than, you know, because you guys absolutely love it. And I really want to know, what is it about that? What is it about Doctor Who that you love? And I think I asked someone in Minneapolis, and they said that they feel, what did they say? Like they sort of could accept themselves more when they watch it. There's something that they felt very connected to it anyway, for many reasons. Why do you love it?
I love it because it has a timepiece, and I just love all time travel.
Okay. Would you like to time travel?
Yes, I would have to.
Why? Where would you go?
I would probably go to either New York or Paris or London.
In a different time zone, yeah.
Yep.
In the past or the future?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that sense of time travel. I think it's still got the element of like magic and you can sort of get lost in it, which I think a lot of people want to do, whereas I think I have this tendency to watch things and go, oh, I really want to feel sad, I really want to, I should like really face reality, but actually a lot of people like watching films like Black Panther or The Avengers where they can just escape for 2 or 3 hours. So it does have that sense of escapism as well, which I can totally appreciate.
My question is one that I had a chance to ask Colin Baker, the Sixth Doctor, years ago at a convention. I've tried to ask every Doctor Who actor that I can about it. So basically I asked him, I said, what is something in the United States that you think the United States does better than the United Kingdom? And what is something that just drives you crazy about the United States? Now, the reason I asked that is because we got an hour-long dialogue of why American bacon was better than United Kingdom bacon.
Who said that?
Colin Baker. Then we also got an additional 30 minutes of why we call things gasoline when it's not a gas, and why don't we call it petrol versus cookies?
And trousers and pants.
So, I ask that question to you.
Okay, what do you guys do better? I think you do like drama and television better. like some of the series you guys have are such high quality. I think I'm vegetarian, but I heard that you do fried chicken really well. And you give bigger portions of food. And in general, like, you can go to any place in America and it can be completely different to any other place in America. Whereas I think in Britain, I guess it's the same in Wales and Scotland and Ireland, but in, yeah, I guess America has this vast, like, landscape and different, yeah, I definitely noticed the difference in people and, like, their personalities in the different places I visited. Does that make sense? And then what's the other question?
Well, one thing that America, or United States, does just drive you crazy.
Well, I think we could all, can we all just agree that your president is an absolute...
Yes, we can!
I will get to this again. John, sorry, I have... if he comes to Britain, I will be throwing tomatoes at him. And it makes me so aggravated, I'm just not going to talk about it. Sorry, I can't.
All right, next question.
Oh, God, this is a podcast. This is going to go like this. We're going to be chucked out of America.
I'll edit that part out if you want.
I don't mind. If you look at my Twitter, you probably see it on a... don't care. Yeah. Maybe if you
it's
should.
Fine. It's fine. We don't mind.
Okay.
Oh, we got two fezzes. All right.
All right.
Fez versus fez. In the Crimson Horror, where you slap...
Oh, yeah.
How long did
they get
that scene
like? Just the once. I just actually slapped him. And I slapped him quite hard. Not because I don't like him, it was just in the moment. And I think, yeah, he did the kiss, and then... I don't think the slap was in the script. But we had discussed beforehand that Jenny would not be amused at the kiss. What the hell, Jonathan? And then... yeah, so, and I, as soon as they said cut, I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Nat, so sorry. And that was, we laughed, but I think his reaction was totally real. So yeah, that was more Catherine than Jenny. It was, well, I mean, not, I didn't want to slap him, but I was just a bit out of control in that moment.
Were there did you take part in any pranks on set?
Pranks. I don't think so. I'm so sorry, I'm boring.
Not at all.
I think if I'd have done more episodes, I'd have, like, more stories. But I wish I could say, like, I did something to Dan or Neve and, like, with their funny faces. There was one of the games, we played a lot of games around that table in the scene with Riversong and Mano Rostro, because we were sat there for so long, and the camera has to... The way they were filming it was really, like, technical. They were panning around and the table was moving. So we were sat there for a long time. And I think we played games where Alex Kingston was suggesting lots of games to play. That kept us entertained.
You mentioned that it's difficult sometimes in sci-fi because you have to imagine a lot, but you've done audio work as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
That's a lot harder to do then, because you're imagining everything.
Yeah, radio, I do quite a lot of radio. You have to do a lot more with your voice, and it can feel quite over the top, similar to what I was saying. Because if you're crying on radio, you have to make the noise, whereas in real life you may not make much noise, but on radio you have to do the breathing, and so... Yeah, it's a different technique, and it can be quite tiring because it's quite physical because you've only got your voice to create everything, create the character, create the emotion, create the feeling. But I love that again. I think that's a good question, like why I love Doctor Who and why I like filming it as well, or being an actor in general. But in Doctor Who, you get to use your imagination even more. So you really have to imagine a dinosaur, or you really have to imagine that you're being killed by Whisperman. Oh, horrible.
That was horrible.
I really did not like the Whisperman. And it was so weird because they just were talking in a normal Welsh accent. I was just freaked out. Yeah, all right, how are you doing? I was like, whoa, what are you?
Have you done work for Big Finish yet, speaking of audio?
I've done two, yeah, small parts, I think. I'd love to do more. Yeah.
Well, I think we'd like to hear more, especially from the gang, right? Yeah. I mean, that would
be... a lot of people have said that. Yes. We'll do a spin-off.
There was. I remember there was some really sincere rumors that you guys would get your own show, your own spin-off series.
Yeah, but I don't think there was anything official. I think it was. No. I think it was the fans.
we want it.
Yeah, which maybe if they say it enough, it will happen. There's literally nothing official about a spin-off. As much as we'd love to do it.
In addition to acting, do you see yourself wanting to be more part of the creative process, behind the scenes, directing, writing?
I'm not sure. I think I definitely struggle when I'm not being creative. It's hard to practice my craft when I'm not actually working. You know, I would think if you were an artist, you'd be painting every day, or if you're a musician, you can practice every day, but it's quite difficult as an actor because you need other actors. You can prepare and you can do it on your own and think about things, but actually the doing part is what acting is, and reacting to another actor. So I've been doing a bit of writing just for myself, really, just to keep creative, and again, getting into the heads of other people is something I love doing, so creating characters or writing for two or three different characters, a short film and a play I'm working on, but not for at the moment, just for me, and maybe I'll send it to a friend or two to read.
You mentioned wanting to join Eve on the stage. Is there a production that you, a dream production that you would love to be in?
Yeah, there's I'd love to do a new play. I've not really worked on a new play that's been written now, and then in the rehearsals you help develop it with the writer, and they sort of write the characters around you. But in terms of plays, I've always wanted to do The Crucible by Arthur Miller.
I
don't know if I'm getting too old now, because Abigail's a bit young. So I think that's passed. A Doll's House by Ibsen.
You know,
yeah, I did it in drama school, but I'd love to play Nora again and again. Another Ibsen. Yeah, I love Ibsen and Chekhov. I've done one Ibsen, one Chekhov. I'd love to do The Seagull. I'd love to do more Shakespeare. I'd just love to do a play.
I think I actually saw a performance of The Dollhouse by the Royal Shakespeare Company when I was in London.
Oh, really? Yeah,
that was a long time ago. But
do you know who played it?
I don't. No. I don't. It was a long time ago. This was like 1990. So,
okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's a great play. If anyone's seen it, I think it would make a really good film, actually.
It would.
Yeah, wouldn't it? It's so ahead of its time as well. It's about a woman who's unhappy in a marriage. It was written in like 1890, I think, or something. And she ends up leaving her husband, which was unheard of in those days. She walks out on her husband and her kids because she feels there's more to her life than being trapped in this marriage. I think he writes so brilliantly for women.
Do you find that women roles are different now as far as what's being offered out there?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of talk and discussion and change happening. I think there's still a way to go, but now people are definitely more aware of the fact that women aren't underrepresented, as well as other groups of people. And the whole talk about equal pay and the Me Too campaign, there's really there's a shift happening. I still think, I read the other day a statistic that, like, out of all the shows in Britain, only like 8% or 10% were written by women. And you look across the board at sort of writers and directors and people who are in charge are mostly men within the industry, and it's about trying to level it out. Yeah, and I think women get to a certain age and it's with less parts.
Right.
And I think I might be falling into that age now where I'm 30, so
No.
Not quite young enough to play the sort of 21-year-old, but I'm not quite old enough to be the older mother. So it's like, what am I? Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting time there. I think things are changing, which is good.
Very much.
Have you done much work outside of Britain? And are you interested in doing that?
Yeah, I haven't. Never worked in America. I've never been over for pilot season. I think there's a lot I want to achieve in Britain before that. But I need to get better at my American accent. My general American, as they call it in Britain, which whatever that is. I don't think I've quite got the toughness to face the, like, it's so competitive in America, even more than Britain. I think you go into audition rooms and there's like even more actresses. So I think I would come out here on the back of something, you know, like something like Downton Abbey or Game of Thrones, or even if you're a big part in Doctor Who, you know, like Jenna and Karen, or Karen definitely, and Matt and Arthur have managed to make that sort of switch over the pond. As you say, from the back of a show as big as Doctor Who, I think it would be easier to come if people knew who I was. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's, in Britain, is there a certain path most actors take to become a professional actor, or is it very diverse?
I'd say the one I did, which was training for 3 years in a drama school. There's about 20 accredited drama schools, you know, like RADA, Guildhall. I went to the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. So there's about a top 10. And 3 years of practical training, vocational, and from that, getting an agent, and then your agent to get your auditions. But there are many ways. People start from a young age. Some people don't go to drama school. They get a job, and they get a job. So there's no any right way. I say the main thing I got out of drama school was the theatre training and the voice and the sort of being able to keep that that energy for a long run of the play. But it's expensive as well now to go to the drama school. So, and every audition is like £50. So, you know, it's keeping out some people who can't afford that. So there needs to be other roots in, I think.
Do you prefer theater over screen, or is there a difference for you?
I think I love both. Yeah, I love them both in different ways. I'd love to be able to continue to do both. I love the rehearsal process of theatre and creating character over a number of weeks and the ensemble feel, and then the when you're on stage, it changes every night, the audience reaction. But I love telly and screen film. I'd love to do more film for the technicality and the fact you really need to be there in the moment. Mm-hmm. You don't have the time to sort of, you don't have that whole journey before because you're filming it out of sequence. And I love doing you do the prep all on your own, really, at that point. You don't have the rehearsal time with other actors, unless you're doing a film and you have that a few days to rehearse something, which is lucky.
What is it like to be a voice actor? Do you tend to be with the other people in the room, or are you recording alone?
In radio, yeah, you're with the other actors. And voiceovers, you're on your own in a little booth, which I do. But radio, yeah, I did a radio last week, the week before, in Manchester in Britain. And there was about four of us in the scene, so and then you go into the green room, have a chat, go back in. It's very nice. You don't have to learn your lines either.
That's a right thing.
Yeah, and Big Finish do a lovely lunch, as I said yesterday.
Do you feel there's a difference between the celebrity culture between Britain and the United States?
I guess Hollywood has always, been that sort of bigger thing, hasn't it, in terms of film actors. I think there's the paparazzi in Britain are renowned for being awful. I don't know, I don't really know much about that world, but I guess when you reach a certain level of fame, it's sort of unavoidable that you're going to be recognised, or that you're going to be stopped. And, you know, I'm sure people from, like, Game of Thrones or Matt even has to walk around with glasses on. You have to get, you get recognized. I don't know so much. I think if you're on the telly at that time, people, you're in people's heads. I just wouldn't like any. I mean, obviously that comes with some of the job, but I've never experienced that, so I feel quite lucky that if I get to play a part that's recognizable like that, then, yeah, sort of gets you deal with it.
Final question. Do you have any advice for folks, young and old, that want to get into acting, performing?
Don't do it. No. No, definitely do it. If you feel passionate about something, do it. Follow your heart. I think there's lots of people going to tell you shouldn't do it or that you should do a normal job. I was told, why don't you go and train as a teacher first? And I'm really glad I didn't. And, you know, people always think you should have something to fall back on. I think if you can, and it's worth giving it a go. And I mean, it's such a competitive industry, and I go through periods of thinking I might quit and give up. But something is still there fighting. Well, I can't imagine doing anything else, but the times when you're not acting are really tough, and when you're not working. But yeah, I guess the main thing I always think is to be interested in the world and people, because that's what you're doing. You're telling stories, and I always think if you're sort of too insular and looking at yourself, how can you be a good actor if you're not noticing everything around you, and being interested in people and inquisitive? Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being here in Huntsville, joining us for Con Castaburus. And are you still going to have some time to spend at your table?
Yes, I'm going to be there now if anyone wants an autograph. yeah, and then I'm flying home tomorrow, so it's a very short visit. But hopefully I'll be back.
Yes, yes, hopefully.
Maybe I'll have some exciting stories and maybe I'll have been back on Doctor Who so I can tell you about it, but I have not been on Doctor Who. just to put it out there. Yeah.
Awesome, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nice
to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
It was
very nice
to meet you.
Thank
you.
Want to seem so happy to see you. Who came to my talk yesterday?
Whoa.
Well, that blows my act.
Good
to get to see you again. Shh. I love that sound. I'm accustomed as I am to public speaking. The way this works best, I find, is if you let me talk and ramble, I'll just sort of endlessly bang on about stuff that's completely unnecessary. But the best thing to do is ask them what they want to know. So
absolutely.
If they can be brave enough to get up to the microphone and ask me questions, as you say, I see nobody's really chomping at the bit to be there.
Please, folks, why not?
Yeah, no, I don't trust him.
He was the one who was going to interview you, so.
Exactly. Hey, my God, how you doing?
I was wondering, have you liked the weekend so far, and if so, what has been the best thing about it for you?
Well, let's put it this way. I've been inside a hotel, I've been inside a car, and I've been inside an airplane, and inside another airplane, and I've been inside another car, and before that I was at home. So I haven't seen a lot of Huntsville, but what I have seen and what I have done is I've met some of its people. And I'm very happy to be here. They've been very kind and very, very generous, and kind of like you guys so far. What the hell over here? Had some good ribs from Moe's. That made me happy. 2 days in a row, nothing new, nothing startling. Pretty good. I've heard some of your life stories. Trying to convince some of you to change. Things you're doing, you're watching, etc. It's kind of good.
pretty good weekend. What have you been doing?
Same thing you've been doing, sitting at a table.
I've been sitting at a table, I've been standing up here talking. Are you sitting at the table? What are we doing at the table?
It's promoting my podcast.
What podcast is that?
Earth Station Who. It's a Doctor Who podcast.
And that's a W.
ESO Network.
No. Earth Station
Who?
Yeah, but it's
I know. Part of the Earth Station One Network.
Oh. Okay.
It makes sense somehow.
Okay, I know, believe you. It's good.
Okay.
It works. Exactly. I'll give him a shot. Is he all right?
Yeah, he's okay.
We'll see.
He likes to say howdy a little too much, though.
I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask you. Ooh. Because I realize, of course, that means I don't necessarily have to answer.
But I'm curious about your work on. You were on the first season of The X Files, very early on.
Yep.
Very early in your career.
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
So, how was that experience?
That's the best question here. That's literally gone. You were on the X-Files. What was it like? Kind of cool.
I mean, back then it was such an unknown thing.
This is where we're getting at what you're actually interested in. What are you interested to find out?
Well, just if during the making, like during that first season, if it really felt like it was something different.
That is a good question. Finally, that's a good question.
It
took a while. See, but if I applied the real three strikes rule, you would have really cost. So, X-Files, nobody knew what it was. I was in the 11th shot episode of X-Files. And it wasn't a series at that point. So while I was there, Chris Carter wrote my episode. While I was there, he got the telegram from Mr. Roth, who actually was just my boss, the Supernatural, for the last 8 years, that don't worry about the numbers, you have a series.
Wow.
So while I was shooting that show, they were picked up.
Really?
Which is really funny, because like I was thinking, those of you who were here yesterday, I was talking about how long it takes to shoot a show. So you're talking about an 8-day show. Back in the days, 8 days was a long, well, in established shows. Sometimes they would try to shoot some of those shows in 7 days. Because if they were new, they hadn't got the infrastructure set up yet, it was like they would be working 7 days to do what was really 10 days' work. So everything would be 17 hours of work. Drivers would be coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning and leaving at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was like craziness going on the whole week. So back then, top of show Fox, which wasn't a network, it was an annexed network.
Right.
That was all it had was The Simpsons, Married with Children.
Right.
And the X-Files. That was it.
Because I knew X-Files was really early on.
And it was very early on in that. So the Fox network didn't have to pay you full price.
Really?
So top of show for any other TV show. So if you did a show for CBS, you got minimum $5,400 or something to be a guest star, your name appears at the front.
How did they pitch it to you?
They didn't pitch it to me. I'll get to the point. So, Fox was so new that they got away with calling it $3,800 job. So it was actually a cheesy job. It was actually a lesser job to take.
Right.
I auditioned for it. It was asked to audition for it. The director was Larry Shaw. It was really funny. And I worked out what I wanted to do, did it, and they gave me the job. So I went up to Canada, and we shot on American Thanksgiving. We shot the day after American Thanksgiving, all of which are like huge penalty days. They have to give you an extra $1,000 for each one of those days to buy out your overtime. Otherwise, it's a double time day.
Right.
So they give you a penalty of $1,000 to do that. Then they didn't have enough time to shoot the teaser. This is the beginning. So we shot that on Sunday, Saturday, so you're not allowed to work on a Saturday, for the competing crew, because they hadn't got enough time to do it.
Right.
And it went over, I ended up making $10,000 in overtime.
Wow.
A $3,800 job. And that's sort of the whole joke of that is, it's one episode in a series, right? So it's one episode in a series. I worked out, I've got to have made close to $100,000 off that one episode.
Really?
Over all of these since 1993.
Oh, sure. With all the residuals.
So when it first aired, it had 3 million viewers. The second airing was 6 million viewers. The third airing was 12 million viewers. So I was actually there when the show was building.
Right.
It was kind of fun to do. And then Chris kept promising he'd bring me back, and he couldn't work out how to do it. Because what he did is he created a supervillain that was too super.
Right.
You know, you just have to lock me up forever, because if I come out again, I could just kill anybody or do whatever I wanted to do.
But it was such a great character.
It was a lovely character, but it was... That was the final part of television. So I would do all these jobs that nobody else knew quite what to do. If you watch any of you watched the episode, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
If you ever watch it again or you own it, look at it. You'll see two really funny things happen. One, it's really me at the end of the hallway with those flames. There are no CGI flames in that entire episode. All flames are real.
Whoa.
That is my arm on fire with rubber cement, which they don't do anymore. That's 1200 degrees. Insane. I was like a turkey on fire. The stunt guy was the head of Stunts Canada at the time, Ken, and he was like, I got this video to show you. I'm like, cool. Shows me a picture of him with his arm on fire.
Right.
That's on the garage somewhere. I'm like, yeah. He's like, would you be willing? Yeah, the episode's called Fire. I imagine I'd be on fire.
Sure.
I thought I'd have all of it. He's like, well, no, you can't do the full body part, but would you do the? I said, of course, I'd love to do it. So we did it, and in the episode, I'm supposed to take a can of accelerant and just pour it down the bar and light it with my arms on fire.
Right.
Actually, this one, so it's like that. And there's two wires running down the bar. It would just set this flame running down the bar. So my arm was on fire. I reached down to pick up the can in my left hand, and it's closed.
Oh no.
I'm on fire. It's closed. It's like it's smashing into the side of the bar. And I just poured it down the bar, going, blah. And then it fires the lid on fire. Which is great. And they got it afterwards, and they said, that is way too scary. And now I'm going to take smashing a can.
Oh, sure.
So they cut that bit out. And at the end of the hallway, when I light the thing on fire, there's actually a backdraft.
Oh, really?
It came out. Yeah, it was not good. And so if you look really closely, you see me drop. And she's just sitting gently. And at the end of the hallway, there's on fire. David Duchovny, the only part of that stunt that he did is he went down a little bit of the hallway where some of the paintings were on fire.
Right.
And you hear a little pop. A tiny little paint chip flew off the picture and landed in the middle of his hand. He said, go.
While your whole arm.
If you look at that scene again, you'll laugh your ass off. He was like complaining he got burned. Like, dude, I'm on fire. So the guy that was my stunt double,
right,
for the full body brand, JJ, who has been my stunt double in all the fire stunts I've done for the three major body burns that I've done in television, has no eyebrows.
Wow.
JJ, he's a huge Battlestar fan. He was supposed to do a stunt on Battlestar. I like that you said was. So JJ is like, he wouldn't come and do the Battlestar episode in a fight with me because he didn't want to know how the end of the season panned out.
Really?
It's such a big fan of shot. I'm not doing it.
Really?
It's a crazy French Canadian who had no eyebrows. You see undercover, he did the full body burn, and you see undercover.
Sure.
And he got burned really bad.
Really?
He went 33 seconds or something on fire.
Ooh. Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, and he was lit up with a propane tank in the X-Files episode, and he was covered in rubber cement.
No way.
I watched him blow up.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't do that one. Fun stuff, you remember. He's in Mantis as well. He's like, probably about to be in Mantis. Very interesting. Small world. Mm-hmm. We got fat out of that. It's crap. What do you need?
I really liked you as Jim Sterling.
Yes.
The members and Bathory. You could always bring bringing a new level to the characters like you.
New level of what?
A new level of. At the start, you know, you're this
It looks like you're the bad guy, but you're not.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I've never played a bad guy, never been quite a bad guy, never been interested in playing a bad guy.
Well, I realized this weekend that I'm as old as Dr. Who. I was thinking about all the years of fandom, like, you know, Starlog and Omni and standing in line to see Star Trek Rebirth and all this other stuff. And I've realized that one of the things that over the years is that fandom doesn't, fandom likes characters that are more than two-dimensional. They want, and we just keep going and going. We have our fan fiction, we have our art and all that other stuff. And that's one of the things that gives me hope when all the things are spreading. And I wondered, over the years, what's kept you hopeful as you work through all these different mediums of these different shows?
That's a really, really cool observation and a really cool question. It's brilliant, actually. It's absolutely the way I feel about it. Yeah, that's kind of the thing that does unite us. And I do believe it's the I do believe it's the passion that is put into something that gives us that feeling that we can get something out of it. It's not just one person putting their heart and soul into it. When you see a show, the shows that we love are the shows that everybody killed somebody to get done. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, you know, Firefly had that. It really did have that because, you know, on that set, everybody was working their damnedest to try to get that done. And the reason why everyone's so upset about it is because it was stolen. There was no reason why it would ever needed to be cancelled. It was a weird time in television, is what it was. And then you look at things like Bionic Woman, which I did, which is awful because it became a compromise of a compromise of a compromise of a compromise of a compromise as more and more business decisions got made, and it ended up as something that nobody gave a damn about. It was miscast from the start, and then no disrespect to Michelle, she was lovely, but it should have been Katie from the start playing a character, which they found out when they shot the pilot. And I went, wow, this is woefully miscast. So that's what happens when committees make sci-fi. Well, actually, it doesn't work. You've got to have some guy's vision, or some girl's vision, or some group of people's vision to bring out the want and the desire to make the best thing they can make. And I'm answering your question by saying, when I sense that being done, that's what I'm jumping onto. When I read something, I go, wow, that's really interesting. I find a new character I want to play. You know, and what story I want to be part of, a story I want to tell. Who doesn't want to be part of Battlestar? Who doesn't want to be part of... Mm-hmm. You know, I watched Battlestar for 2.5 years before I was on it. I was like, mate, I'll speak your floors on that show. And I knew Ron and I knew David. And they were like, you know, we probably won't be able to find something for you. I don't know, I'm not sure, whatever. And then one day, suddenly, it's like, it's written for me. You know what I mean? And Jim Sterling was written for me. And those things were by my friends who are great writers and wickedly evil people who we love. So, you know, Naren Shankar and Heavy Krishna Vaswatch and all these people whose names you will see on the shows you love. You know, Amy Berg, who's now, as I said, doing Counterpart. Anyone seen Counterpart?
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
It's awesome. It was just amazing.
J.K. Simmons' new series. It is like, what are they doing? And that's Amy, and Amy wrote on Leverage.
Really?
Yeah, she's done a lot of things since then, but she's... That's the thing, is these people are great. I mean, Ben Edlund is one of my favorite people on the planet. Ben created The Tick. Right? He created Crowley.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote on Buffy, and he wrote on Angel, and all that stuff. But he's so much fun. His stuff just makes me laugh like a drain. Who else could have created Dinosaur Neil? You know, it's genius. It's, thank you, wonderful. And happy birthday for your next one. Hiya.
Okay, so you've been in pretty much every show I have loved.
Mm-hmm.
And you are so loved by the fans that you could actually say, hey, I want to be in this show.
Doesn't matter about that. Never has, never.
There are shows that you could actually, you are so loved, I am sure that if there are... are there any shows...
Ah, question!
Are there any shows that you currently love now that you wish to be a part of?
I will never tell you. in case I am. That's one reason. Secondly, it doesn't work like that. It really doesn't work like that. They give me some offer. It's like, will your fans just leave me alone?
Sure.
You know, it's like, I don't write characters with people in mind. I write characters with characters in mind. Then I find the person to do it. So he's already bummed that I get 50,000 people saying, can you please put Mark Shepard in Sherlock? The only reason why is to make a really good t-shirt. It's like, you know, he and I have talked about it for years. It's like, and Gaydis is I'm a huge fan of his. He's been in the League of Gentlemen days, and it's like, he's always made me laugh. He's a great writer, and he's, you know, they're all like, it comes when it comes. And the great shows have great creators, and the great creators have really strong opinions. And those opinions don't always include me. But some of them do, and when they do, you'll know about it. And when it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, Joss gave me the role in Firefly that he wrote for himself. But they wouldn't let him play because he's a crap actor. He was like, literally, dude, you wrote the bloody thing, you directed the bloody thing, you can't be in it. Get a real actor. So he got me in to do that. And that was, so that's why he was treating me so weirdly. And then when he did Dollhouse, he was like, I get this phone call, Joss wants you to do Dollhouse. I'm like, okay, can I read it? They send me a hated Dollhouse. Again, a compromise of a compromise of a compromise of a guy. I didn't manage to do what I wanted to do. It's fine, it's just the way TV is sometimes. He just had any of these shows not on Fox, he probably would have been fine. So I get this slide sent to me. I'm reading, and the character's called Tanaka. And I said, it wasn't written for me then, was it? I arrive at Farms, and Joss is there, and he's like, hey, it's on the lot. I wasn't your first bloody choice, was I? So I'm keeping the name. He goes, oh, God, I knew you'd say that. He goes, yeah. He said, well, maybe your stepfather was Japanese. I'm like, or I married a Japanese guy. He's a fox, and never happened. So, yeah, so we actually made a joke about it in the last episode I did. And they ended up cutting it out. It was very funny. The Tamil's character actually calls me by my name for like a minute or two outside the place. And he calls me like Stuart or something. And I get to the end of it. You never hear my first name. I get to the end and it's relieving. And I'm like, everybody out. I go back and say, my name's not Stuart. So nobody will ever know what my name was in the show. It's kind of fun. Kind of interesting. Hey, you. I'm like, yeah.
Thank you.
My son was six. He went to school with a full World Hawk side shave. David Bowie's hairdresser cut it for him. The next day, there was 400 kids in his school with full walks. So cool. It's pretty good. I like it. It's a proper mohawk. Not this fake stuff. It's very good. What do you want?
What's your favorite part of Doctor Who?
Well, the Doctor would be my favorite part of Doctor Who. It's pretty good. I mean, well, then it's hard. Then you've got to go. The TARDIS, as Neil Gaiman's involvement with the TARDIS, is pretty amazing. And then you've got to go. The monsters are pretty cool. Any of the monsters that actually scared you? I mean, really scared you? Ever? Come on, you can tell the truth. When I was a kid, the Cybermen scared the piss out of me. Literally, was that a thing of them coming up by some pearls out through the drains and stuff? Well, that was just evil. That was insane. You know, the weeping angels don't worry you?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't do that. These kids are pretty so tough nowadays. Who's your favorite doctor? He's running. You're not going anywhere. Start a conversation with me and run away. Who's your favorite doctor? You don't know? Who's your favorite doctor? It just gets louder. Who's your favorite doctor? I'm not going to answer me. Fine. Work it out, come back to can I do you for?
I actually have two questions.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But one I wanted to know was on Supernatural, he would call Cameron Dean News to school.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you ever call Jared and Jensen that, like get their attention or something like that. Like just...
Why? I try not to talk to them at any point in time. They're so tall and strange in there. They're on the megaphone to get up there.
And I was also wondering, what's your favorite Doctor Who creature?
Creature?
Yeah, like just monster or whatever.
Well, probably have to be. The Silence is pretty evil. I mean, once he created the Weeping Angels, which is just genius evilness, that's how to scare children. I could tell he was scared, really. He wasn't just really I mean, that was just really. Daleks never scared me. I mean, he just needed stairs. It was over. Until season, whatever it was. Six, seven, or something. Ooh, now the Hobart. Never did it for me. Daleks were down my knee, whatever. Next one. I like to make a pain in the union, Jack. I mean, you had to go. I had to leave before. But yeah, Daleks, man, nothing. But I think the Silence is pretty good. The idea that something that's in the corner of your eye, something you think you remember seeing somewhere at some point, because essentially, when you look at them, you can see them, but when you look away, for some reason, you cannot remember that you've ever seen them. That's kind of awful. And then you sort of Monk scream over that, which is the idea that Monk could remember them better than anybody else, and that's why they look like that. But yeah, it's kind of horrible parasitic beings that use us as mice. It's very Douglas Adams, actually, to think about it.
Yes.
True.
Hello. When you were directing your father, did that go easy, or did you have trouble telling him?
I don't have any trouble telling you anything. Does he have trouble listening? Yes, on occasion. So we're in Louisiana sweating our asses off. Horrible, horrible weather. And I've given him 7 pages of dialogue to learn. I've given him like 2.5 weeks to learn it. And it's all some of it's off camera and some of it's him sitting in the office. So you know what the bastard does, don't you? He learns all the stuff that's on camera and doesn't bother to learn the stuff that's off camera. So, well, that's nice, because that kind of forces my edit a little bit. So I can't choose what lines I shoot. I'm going to shoot the whole thing on him, and, you know, I'm into cutting it. But I have to nail cut where he says, and I'm like, it's a little uncomfortable. And so I walked up, you know, away from the set back towards the monitors, and I could hear it very clearly in my headphones going, I don't know what his fucking problem is. So it's off camera, I don't have to do this, but we still have to go, bitching and moaning. But so I just walked back on and said, you do realize, when you're going to insult the director, make sure you're not wearing a microphone. That's fun. What do you want?
Oh, hi.
Sorry, can I wake you up?
But...
I just want to get up with it.
All
right, I like the giggling. The giggling's good. What do we make this worse?
All right. When you play Colin in Supernatural, you are basically in my top 2 favorite characters.
That's not what you say to people. Have you dated yet?
No.
When you do, do me a favor. Never go to a guy and say, by the way, when we're dating, you're in my top 2 favorite characters.
I have 2 questions, but two extra questions.
Oh, follow-up.
All right. My first question is, what really got you into the acting business? And my second one is,
What were your favorite moments when shooting Supernatural?
What got me into acting was other people saying, do you want to do this? And I sort of went, well, and we'll see, and did it. And it sort of happened, and sort of kept going, and that was it. And that was exciting. And the other one was my favorite Supernatural moments. A lot of them are on the gag reels, because you can just tell how much fun we were having. They're very real. Oh, God, why did you dress like that? Especially the red tie and the Constantine convention last night. The end of season 8 was so much fun to do. Yes, the end of season 8 was good. We shot all in sequence, which you very rarely do, shoot things in order. We shot all in sequence and everybody was just in the same mindset and the crew was just amazing. We just put the whole Stephanie in the neck of blood and me singing and singing Bowie and...
Wait, you actually sung? I haven't gotten there yet.
I'm singing. You know, there's an old saying, which is if you don't want to know the score, you don't go down to the pub. I like that. Hey.
Hi. I don't actually have a question about the show. I know you are a big Chicago Cubs fan.
I am a Cubs fan.
And my daughter and I would like to know what your reaction was when they finally broke the 108-year curse.
I was at the World Series. I was in Chicago in Game 3. We lost 1-0, but it was fun. I seemed to Bill Murray singing to me after the ball game. As Daffy Duck. It was great. It was amazing. Beautiful. Wonderful. You're falling from your belly button. It's quite funny.
Well, my daughter is in Arizona babysitting and wanted...
What's her name?
Mahala.
Hey, Mahala.
Thank you.
Hello. Since you've played a wide variety of characters over a long...
Who are you fat? No.
I can't call anybody fat. Paul Mayer wanted to stand beside me because it made him look skinny. My question is... What is the strangest thing that anybody has brought to you at one of these conventions that you've attended that they wanted you to sign?
Body parts.
They're on or other?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure. Prosthetic legs. All sorts of interesting things. I don't really like signing people's body because they tend to go up and get it tattooed. I'm like, there's a lot prettier things you can get tattooed than my signature. My face. you know what the weirdest thing is? I now remember the actual weirdest thing. There was a young lady came up to me and brought me a picture of herself to autograph. To keep for herself, not to give to me. So, why would I want to go after this? It's okay. Kind of weird. It's good. Hi. You can stand up if you want to. Oh, no, sorry.
Have you heard of mine?
I don't. That's the problem. It's hard to do. Like, do you know a song? Do you know, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star? How's it going? Twinkle, just twinkle. Doesn't matter, you don't have to sing it. Just say it. There goes what? Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. What's the next line? What's the next line? So that's how I remember my lines. It's my dad's dancing song. And this is in my ear. Do you understand the point I'm trying to make? You know, like, you know the words to stuff? Like, what's your favorite song on the radio? Alright, let's go easy. Do you love Frozen?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know Let It Go? But you can sing every word of Let It Go. Right, so if that's the case, and you can maybe do that. That's what I have to do to learn my lines. I have to learn it like you learn a song. I have to love it, care about it, think about it, try to learn it, and do it that way. I like your cross lines. It's fine when you look at something too close to you guys. Just turn the microphone around. You do this one, then? Ready? What was the answer? Ready? Good question. No. Favorite monster in Supernatural?
Yes.
I don't know. Who's yours, babe? What's your favorite? You didn't think this one through.
I'm happy, but yes, it's probably the woman in white.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty scary. But cool. I like Death. Do you remember when Death first appeared at the end of season 5?
Yeah.
Junior Richings? He got out of the bubble bag cabin, which is like the coolest car ever built in the house. 59 bubble bag cabin. He gets out. And by the way, there's a second shot of that, steadicam shot of that, which comes off the license plate. He comes up to him and gets out. And the license plate, you won't believe what Death's license plate was. B-U-H-B-Y-E. Comes up here and walks down, and you know, the guy bumps into him, and he just throws him, and the guy just like plants down. But I like Death for that reason. Anyway, you're my favorite. What do you want? The bathroom's out there.
At least
was this an episode of Columbo?
Would you rather I take this off?
What?
Would you rather I take the coat off this?
What do you think? I just gone from a baby in a trench coat to a baby.
That's good.
Excuse you.
My question for you is...
I'm still brave enough to ask a question.
My question to you is, was there ever any part in any script of any work that you have done that was just... like you didn't see coming at all? Like a major twist?
I have to read them before I do them. So I always see them coming. Oh, you mean when I read them?
Yeah, like when finding out that Chuck was God.
No, I mean, I love Rob, trust me. I love Rob Benedict a lot. He's a good guy. It makes absolutely no sense to me. That the idea of Chuck being... thinking he's God is genius. Having a writer who thinks he's God because what he writes comes true is truly brilliant. It's just it's got that witticism to it, that just has that whimsy to it that makes it work. When he finds out he's God, it just didn't do anything for me. I think Baby was God. Actually, I think that's what it was supposed to be. Or was supposed to be. I think Baby was supposed to be God. God takes care of the Winchesters. Baby takes care of the Winchesters. Always there. That's the point. That always was the point. So that stuff actually disappointed me wholeheartedly, most of the time. You know, reading stuff like the first version of the final script of 1223 is like, oh my God, why don't I just leave me dead in 21? Things like that. There's a lot of, the last couple of years were like really not that exciting to read. It was always things having to be fixed and argued about, etc. But probably my time had come at that point. But things that got me was like picking up the script for the last episode of Battlestar Galactica when it was sent to me and reading that we actually had Hendrix's All on the Watchtower with chills up and down my spine. It was perfect. The ending of Battlestar was actually brilliant. I can't believe what he says. It's genius. It absolutely fits in what it is. I got chills when I read that. That will be the last time. But most of the last couple of years of reading Supernatural scripts of power. Oh, God's sakes, how do I say that? You know, it's kind of got interesting, you know? I like, listen, don't get me wrong. I said this before, seasons, you know, season 5, you know, you get to the end of season 5, how do you reboot the show? Came back in season 6, it was a really good, really good turnaround. 7 would have been a great season 12. It's a terrible season 7, but it would have been a great season 12. It worked. If it was on last year or the year before last, it would have been a great season. Leviathans would have worked, right? It would have been the time to do it. And so, you know, 8, fantastic. 9, pretty damn amazing. 10, pretty good for most of it. 11, 12, and I haven't watched since then, so. So, you know, they reboot and they do that. And it's hard to do it. You think about trying to keep a show in the air for 13 years. How do you reinvent the thing that's like, you can't kill those two guys, but you can do whatever you want to them for, you know, a year. Kind of just go back on you. Hiya, this is a shared question. Are you going to sing? Why have you got 4 pairs of... Oh, sorry.
If you could have played any other character in Supernatural, who would it be?
Why would I want to play any other character? They're all stupid. Why would I want to play the first role on the set? Baby in a trench coat. I mean, seriously, what would I want to play? What would you want me to play? Didn't think that one through. Oh, it's okay. There is nothing else but Crowley. Crowley's fine.
Hey, go ahead. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine.
What can I do you for, sir?
I was wondering, what were the biggest influences on your drumming style?
Charlie Watts was my favorite drummer. Rolling Stones, but I listened to everybody over the years, I guess. Could be anyone from Clyde Stubblefield to... there's so many. There's just so many great drummers. Weird drummers, you know, I was never a Bonham drummer, but I like the guys that he liked.
The Thunder. The Thunder.
Well, no, if you go back to, you know,
Charlie Rich and stuff like that. I like
who?
Charlie Rich.
Charlie Rich? Buddy Rich.
Buddy Rich.
Yeah.
Charlie Rich is a country singer.
Yeah.
Buddy Rich was never a... Buddy Rich was an amazing technical drummer. G. Krupa was my favorite at that point. Yes. Paranoid, it's always better. way more interesting. But yeah, but some of these great drummers, amazing drummers out there. Just listening to Jed Lynch, he's playing with, he's been Happy Mondays, and he's now playing with Peter Gabriel. I should tell you everything you need to know. Genius. He's my age now. It's kind of cool. Hiya!
Hello. I was going to ask, if you could have any item, magical, non, or power from any TV show or movie, what would it be and why?
Magical ability to stop people asking me that question. No. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes, sir.
There you go. It was a long walk for nothing. Oh, yeah.
Microphone when we started walking.
It wasn't a microphone.
I'm only here because you play. This one's your favorite.
I know, which one's yours?
The Fire Guy from X-Files.
Fire Guy, X-Files, that's your favorite? Cool. That's what counts. Cool. My favorite is his man. I appreciate that. That's really cool. I like Eugene too, as if you're talking about the X-Files. This is the scariest damn character they ever had in the movie. Who's the one that could foresee people's death? Like Peter Boyle played that character. Next, that was just evil. That's about as scary as you ever get. The idea that the guy can actually tell you how you died. This is not right. Hey, you. Nice shirt.
What's your favorite line that you had to say from Supernatural?
Oh, for God's sake. That was it. The first one was funny. Where's your moose? It's funny. Because it was so nonchalant. And he just answered straight away, oh, he went out. Where's your moose? It just, and it stuck. Like you're calling him Gigantor and Lumberjack and had the stupid name. I think moose was funny. But I've said that, you know, I did one of the final creation conventions I did. Somebody printed up like 80 of the sayings I'd had on the show, and people were holding them up on paddles. So I tend to walk out to the audience, as you now know. And so I get bored standing on the stage.
Understandable.
And I like to see your faces, give you a hard time. Thank God most of you are not dressed as Castiel. There were these phrases on this, you know, the obvious ones. No one in the history tortures me, torture, we torture, I torture you, we tortured with is, you know, comes springs to mind. There's a lot of those. Wall Street, quote, that's not great. And I was reading them, I'd forgotten some of them, and I was just laughing so hard because I was instantly remembering the context they were in. I still think the funniest thing I've ever heard on Supernatural, which is on the gag reel somewhere, which is Jensen fumbled a line 38 times. I'd rather be slapped during sex by a girl in a Zorro mask, but there you go, something's the line. And he couldn't do it. It was like an hour out of our lives. It was literally, and because Jared is a mean little bastard. And he's like, excuse me, every single time I made a mistake, he said, what? I said, is that what you meant to say? You want to try that again? I've never seen Jensen fail so badly in my entire life. There is, every take of that was printed. And maybe for the cast and crew gag reel, they use that as the punctuation. Every 2 minutes of the end. I'd rather be slapped with a girl in the face and slap. I'd rather be slapped by Zara. Just went on and on and on. It's a good line. Thank you. Hey, I'm really mellow today. It's Sunday. It's okay. You don't have to find me fascinating. I do.
In your opinion, what makes a good villain?
Never known a villain, never played a villain, never wanted to play a villain. No such thing as a good villain. Villainy is in the eye of the beholder. People are people. They have ideas and agenda, and even if they're surreal people but from different planets with different, you know, rules and different forms, etc., makes no difference. They're all people with their own beliefs. History is written by the winners. Remember that. So if you play the guy that lost, somebody might call you the villain. But just remember in an alternate universe you won.
Alright, was there ever any prop?
No, no, no. Can I tell you? No. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not telling you. I know that question. I know that. Did I steal any props? Is what you're asking. You come to say in front of my employers for the rest of my life, did you steal any props from the sets of any of the shows that you're on? Absolutely not. Find out three or four TARDISes and you know, it's whatever. It's like, it's not a big deal, I don't mind. One more actually bought me my robo glasses at auction and gave it to me in a free call. So, kind of fun.
Hi. Okay, so my question kind of ties with the question that you received earlier. Her question was if you could have chosen anything to be a part of.
And I love physical speakers. I think physical speakers are the most cool thing.
And I respect your answer there, but my question ties in on that. Is there any...
I love how you're ignoring me, too.
Is there any fandom that has been, the series, the series has been discontinued, but that you would have liked to have been a part of, but were unable to? For example, Fringe.
I have friends that are on Fringe. It's irrelevant. It doesn't, that's not something, there's so much going on in the universe. That stuff that was good that's gone, you take and you use as fuel for the next thing you want to do. You know, that's the kind of way it goes. Regrets don't really work that well. You know, there's a million roles I auditioned for and didn't get. And then I saw them and went, oh, now I know why. You know, I had a completely different idea of what the hell I was supposed to be. I was completely wrong for it. Or I was right for it and they made a mistake. You know, which has happened. You know, a couple of those people are like, yeah, I still look better now. But it's weird. It's one of those things you can't live like that. Or you just lose your mind. It's not a thing where I get up in the morning and I choose what job I want to do. I mean, much as I'd love to be able to do that, I can't. The truth is, you know, I have to fight for work just like everybody else. And I've just been very lucky with the stuff that I've got, and the stuff I've been given, and the stuff I've been pushed towards. What got the chance to do is it's stuff that I've loved, and therefore you guys have loved it too. So I've been very happy with that.
Thank you.
So, thank you for asking. You just appeared from nowhere.
You talk about your emotional connection to the characters and the things you read and the truth in those, and that's what inspires you to do the things. You said that in your acting. What is it that...
Actually, no. I'll give you a better answer than that. The better answer than that is I'm terrified to do it any other way. I'm not somebody who's comfortable and conscious of being able to go stand out naked in front of a whole bunch of people and try something without any sort of idea of knowing what I'm doing. So the reason why I do what I do is primarily fear. But continue.
Well, on the flip side of that, was there music that motivated you to do that and inspires you in the way that you play what you play? You know, was it something you listened to? Was it people you knew?
What happens when you play? It's what happens when you play. It's what happens when you act. It's what happens when you write. It's what happens when you paint. It's what happens when you do it. It's the actual action of doing it. It's the thing that's taken me my whole life to understand is that you don't feel love by receiving love. You feel love by giving love. Mm-hmm. And those things are actions and things you need to do. I thought I'd be happier if I had more of something. I'm not. I'm happier when I'm pulling out more of something. My wife does that naturally. Terrifying to me. That's what makes her better than me. And the more I try to be like her, the nicer my life is.
So you're kind of known for doing a handful, you know, one to a handful of episodes in a variety of shows. So what was it about Supernatural that got you to stick around so long there? Was it just the opportunity?
It wasn't my choice. They just kept asking me to come back.
You always have the choice to say no.
Well, so. Yeah, I did eventually. That's after they had the choice to say no, and they took their choice to say no before I did. But, it just, there was a point, it was actually a point in my life there was a lot of changes going on in my life when I started doing it. And I was like, you know what? We got to making decisions on, did I want to do this? I was offered another series by the same network. Well, not by the same studio. No, by the same network. By the same network, different studio, the same network. So CBS, CWR offered me a series. I was like, and Warner's went nuts. So I wasn't a series regular, that's why they made me a series regular. And I had a choice not to do it. I'm like, eh, I've got some more stories to tell. It's that simple. And then when I ran out of stories to tell, I stopped telling them.
Well, we all certainly enjoyed the stories you did tell on the show, so thank you.
Thank you. You're going to wrap this up?
I wondered what were some science fiction TV shows and movies that you enjoyed growing up?
Oh, I watched everything. I mean, I watched so many films. Watched everything that was ever out there. There's so many things that I watched. But I love great films like everybody else. I mean, the films of the 70s are what changed my life, if you really think about it. You know, see, the joke of Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, is that whole era of filmmaking that made me want to do what I did and tell a story. But what's great is that in television, the best stories are being told in genre and what-if scenarios, way better than actually, I wasn't going to have to be on, like, Chicago Med or something. It just isn't going to happen. That's just not my thing. You know, that's I'm killing somebody. So, I just want to say...
Say something? Cool. Yeah, go ahead.
How
you doing, Greg? I'm doing great. Loving every second of this.
Good, I'm glad. I've had a wonderful time this weekend. It's wonderful to talk to you guys and see your faces. The reason why I travel and I do these things is so I get to see my audience in the flesh. That's what I care about doing. And it's a massive difference to me to see your faces and see your reactions to what it is that I do. It's a lovely thing. It's an honor to be part of that. You know, we do this in the dark and blind, and we get to come out to conventions and see you guys. We get to share your response. It feeds us again, and it makes me go out and want to do better work and want to do other things. It's a lovely thing. But I have to tell you guys that I really appreciate the way you guys come together. This is another place that you've created. Which facilitates people bonding together and coming together like a big giant family. And it's a safe place to be. And we've got people, you know. The world is a really, really harsh place to live right now. It's not a pleasant place to be. Most of the world is not a pleasant place to be. And it's nice to be able to come to a little corner of the world and find people loving each other and caring about each other and being nice to each other, no matter what their, you know, what their identity is, let's put it that way. So that's where I put it. And I think it's a really special thing. And it sounds so grand. There's a lot of you here that are really young. And what's funny is you're seeing something that you won't see anywhere else. You don't see people coming together like this apart from in support of something or loving something. So maybe young guys who are here, young girls who are here who aren't huge Who fans but have been dragged along by their parents. Be fans of something. If it's not this, if it teaches you nothing else, it will remind you that you always have a safe place to come and hang out. Nobody's going to judge you for the color of your hair or what you did last week. Nobody's interested. If you want to be here and you want to have fun and you want to be part of this, it's a safe place to be and it's a wonderful thing. And people like Bonnie and your friends and family create a very special place for that to happen. I like doing big conventions because I can get to see a lot of people. But I love doing this size convention way, way more because I get to see your faces repeatedly over the 2 days. And like, I know a lot of your faces now. But if I bump into you again, I will remember you. And it's you have an impact on me, and I appreciate it. And you shared your stories with me and asked me stupid questions. But it does mean a lot to me. You know, I give up a lot to be away from my family, but I get a lot in return for that. I love to do this. My wife says it's something that I love to do, and I should be encouraged to do it at all costs. Maybe she's just trying to get me out of the house. But I just want to say thank you, and I will tell you that all the people that I know that I've worked with feel exactly the same way as I do. You have to know that. And I remind you, as I said to somebody today, if you see an actor or an artist or somebody you care about do me the favor, as scared as you may be, as nervous as you can be at times, just remembering moments with each and every one of us. Our clashing jackets is one of us remembering. But as nervous as we can be with people, if you see somebody that you really like and admire, go to them and say, I don't want to bother you or disturb you, but I just want to let you know I love your work. It will make that person's day. If it doesn't, they're a sociopath and they'll never watch it. I can do something which doesn't have a finite audience that I'm supposed to meet, and I actually get to meet my audience, and I thank you for that. Thank you for the things that you do, keep being kind to each other. The charitable stuff you guys do blows my mind. You're always so, so good at that. It's all about loving and supporting each other. It's about loving and supporting Bonnie and what she's trying to do. We thank Bonnie for this so far. And yellows have been very, very good to me. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for making it fun and keeping it safe. Have a good time, and I hope to see you again here sometime when it works out. I'll definitely come back when I can. All right? Thank you.
Listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.